Episode 436.
Top 5 ways we've changed in 5 years. Welcome to the Sci-Fi Christian, bringing you theology at warp speed. I'm Matt Anderson.
And I'm Ben DiBono. We are back from the hiatus. It's over.
It's over, everybody. We're back.
At last.
And we're here to give you fresh content every week.
Except for 2 weeks from now when I'm on vacation.
That's true, Ben. So
that's right, everyone. I'm going on another vacation.
So we'll be back next week to do the finale of our excavation of the X-Files.
Oh, I thought you were going to say finale from our return of hiatus before we go on a 1 week hiatus again.
And then we'll get, and then you'll have a few more, well, we can't call them hiatus episodes anymore. We'll just call them extras. Or
maybe we shouldn't release. We just,
let people
catch up. The hiatus is over. Yeah. Yeah.
I've got,
we can discuss it off air.
I've got two. So I don't know if people even care about this, but I'll just tell you real quick. Every time I appear on a different person's show, I keep it, and I eventually release it here. I've got, well, actually, there's, counting my recent appearance,
man.
Just hold on, counting my recent Mockingjay Part 2 appearance,
yeah,
last fall on Real World Theology. We didn't do that one, Part 2, right?
Yeah,
we did Part 1. I have 3 movie reviews that I was on other people's podcasts for. Now, we could save these.
I'd vote for saving them.
And just let people catch up.
Let's let people catch up.
So, okay. Well, just so you guys know out there in the audience, there's 3 more movie review episodes.
You'll get them.
Yeah, you'll get them.
You will get
before
them.
The end of the Sci-Fi
But
Christian.
We've done a lot of those episodes recently, yeah. So we let people catch
a
up.
A lot.
A lot.
Like, the hiatus was...
Maybe.
The end of the hiatus basically was just like, we're running on fumes. Let's get some of these
out
there.
Yeah, so I feel like if this is the end of hiatus, we got to take a break from those for a while. Let people catch up. And it's, you know, it's going to be like our new schedule once we get to 500, because you only want to record every other week then anyway.
Exactly.
If that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was just talking to Dez earlier today. I think it would be nice to get to 500, do once or twice a month recording, and then once we get
it was every other week. Now it's once a month.
Once or twice a month.
Once or twice a month.
And then when we get to the end of the year, then you and I can evaluate. Does this thing continue into 2017, or is 2016 the end?
Well, it continues. It's just with our, yeah.
So get your applications in now if you'd like to be Ben's.
I already got your replacements.
Oh, do you know who it's going to be?
Well, you know our friend Ben Adams.
Oh, yeah.
He said if you quit, he wants to take over.
That's awesome. I haven't talked to him in years,
though. And
then
we have Ben Kirkwold, who does the Game
Absolutely.
Of Thrones. So it's just going to be 3 Bens.
That is kind of cool,
that
actually.
That would be pretty cool.
All right, well, good. So you're good. So forget about
applications. You're already replaced. If you're gone, you're out.
Yeah, I do like it, though, because it's interesting. When you took a break during 2012, I replaced you with 2 other people.
That's right.
And now when I leave, you'll replace me with
But your
other
mistake
people.
Was that they weren't Ben's.
That may have been my mistake.
Yeah.
Someday we should have a big episode where I take my team, me, Daniel, and Kobe, and you bring your 3 Ben's.
Yeah.
And we have some sort of sci-fi feud.
Well, we'd probably win because we're a pretty potent force.
And
plus, Ben can out-yell everyone, so
man.
There's that.
Well, you know what? As we go into 2016 here, maybe we should bring those guys on individually to let them have some episodes and get some practice here before I leave.
That's true.
Would they be up for that?
I don't know.
We could Skype them in.
Yeah. I don't think Ben Kirkwold has ever listened to the show.
He should probably start listening when he's on it. Well, no, that I guess
I don't listen to the show, so there's that.
Man, wow. Well, guys, that's what you have to look forward to in 2017.
Yeah.
The 3 Bens
right.
from the Sci-Fi Christian.
That's right.
Man, that's crazy. What a change. Well, you still bring me back as a guest like I brought you back?
We'll have to see. You know, I'm not big on guests.
All right.
We'll see. I don't want to say no, but I'm not saying yes either.
Well, Ben, all this talk, we should have mentioned right away. Happy anniversary.
A happy anniversary to you.
Shaking your hand here.
Yeah.
5 years ago tonight. And
here you are threatening a divorce.
Not threatening.
It was
basically
promising.
Telling.
Yeah.
5 years ago tonight, we started the Sci-Fi Christian, Ben.
Right.
I mean, and I didn't know if it was 5 years ago that we... So I should say we're recording here January 11th, 2016. I didn't know if it was 5 years ago that we released our first episode or recorded, but thanks to Facebook Memories.
Yeah, I saw that.
This morning I saw that we indeed did record an episode on the 11th.
So we released it right away.
You got right to it. So
I did used to always release immediately after we finished recording.
So that's what we're going to do tonight. This episode is going to hit the air immediately following our recording. So we're just doing one episode this week.
That's right.
So
we're out of practice, so we got to get back into it.
That's right. So it's been 5 years, Ben, so we decided for this milestone episode, why don't we do the top five ways that we've changed in the last 5 years? And
well, now, when you pitched this episode to me,
I know
what my memory of it, and I did completely forget about what you had said for a long time, so it might be shaky, but my memory of it was this was going to be five ways our sci-fi tastes had changed.
You're 100% right. But I said, but we should also mix in some personal things, like you became a Catholic. That's a huge change. And I started a family. Huge change. And so...
Yeah, you said you had... Then you told me you had one personal thing.
And then... Yeah, but...
Then today, it sounded like you had all personal things.
Well, they'll tie into what we discuss on the show.
Okay.
But it's not exactly what I originally envisioned. Do you mind if we get to my number five, I think it'll be easier to explain. So can we just start here and I'll...
Yeah, that's fine.
Why don't you go ahead and say number five for me then?
Well, number five.
Number five for me was my very first idea for this whole countdown. And I thought, well, if I have that idea, I'm sure I can come up with others.
Right.
Well, guess what? Could not really come up with a lot of others. So this is a taste thing. So a sci-fi taste that has changed. So... You may remember back to season one of the Sci-Fi Christian, Ben, when you and I would bring up Superman, we would hate on Superman.
Yeah.
But I don't know what changed in me, but over the last 5 years, Superman's kind of grown on me. And it's not just like the Man of Steel version of Superman from the film, but I do kind of like, I kind of appreciate the classic Boy Scout, nice guy Superman. I don't need him to be kind of like... kind of a gray character. I think I like Superman all the way good. And that's changed. That's a big change from five years ago.
Yeah, but he's still boring.
That's the thing. For some reason, that character resonates with me more now than he did in 2011, and I don't know what changed in me that made me kind of appreciate that kind of that solid rock that you can find in Superman.
Right.
And that is basically the only sci-fi thing I have on my list. But
I can think of other things for you.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping that you can help me out here. So yeah, maybe when we get past the list, you can name a few other things.
Okay.
All right, you're number five.
Well, my number five, and this is an interesting one, because I believe on our pilot episode, we mentioned five things we're into like right now or something. And I think one of the things I mentioned was graphic novels on there. I don't read any graphic novels anymore. And I'll tell you one of the reasons for it is actually because of this book competition we've been doing the last couple of years. When we decided the rules were graphic novels don't count, like, it's not that I don't want to read graphic novels. It's just, if I'm going to read a book, I want it to count towards my goal. Well, so
we're not really doing a competition.
Well, it's a little bit of a competition.
I mean, we know you're going to win.
It's a competition in the sense of, like, I feel like I got a reputation to uphold.
Okay.
Where I've been 100-plus all these years. And if I start reading graphic novels, I'm not going to make it.
I totally hear you. Is there any part of you that's sort of sad about that? Like, you kind of miss some of those stories?
I'm not sad about it. Like, I'd kind of like to go back and reread Fables now that it's over and read the whole thing.
Reread it, or would you just pick it up?
I'd reread it.
Okay.
I've had From Hell by Alan Moore sitting on my bookshelf for years now.
Well, when it's time for the Alan Moore episode, we'll get
to that. That's actually why I bought it. I'm not even joking. Back in season one, when we decided we were going to do an Alan Moore episode, I bought it. So it's been there for like 5 years, and I almost think that one should count because it's like 500 pages long, but it wouldn't because those are the rules. And it's just tough to have the motivation to want to spend time on it. And then you get to the end, like, oh, that didn't even count towards my numbers. How sad.
I still read graphic novels, and I still get, I think, reasonable book numbers.
Yeah, but see, like...
But it's not Ben DeBono.
Right, and maybe I'm just being prideful, because I have a reputation to uphold here.
I get it.
Yeah, so I haven't read any graphic novels for years.
Wow, that's quite a change.
Like, Neil Gaiman wrote that Sandman prequel. I'd like to read that. I'd like to reread all of the Sandman stuff sometime. Maybe once you're gone, then I'll just cancel the book comp or change the rules because I can do whatever I want.
We're not even competing. Like, it doesn't matter.
I'm competing against myself.
Okay, to beat me?
No, to beat me.
To beat you from last year?
No, just to, like, get over 100.
To be the best Ben you can be.
To be the best Ben I can be.
Okay, that makes sense.
You know, it just feels like I want my numbers to show that I'm reading a lot, and then it feels like if I'm spending time reading on something that doesn't count as reading, I wish I hadn't done that.
I think I understand what you're saying, but
Like, think of how high your numbers could be if, I mean, you like aim for 40 books and then you set your goal at like 250 or something. So you read 200 graphic novels. How many more novels could you actually read if you didn't read those?
I mean,
you'd be at like 102.
Yeah, who knows?
That'd be, see, don't,
maybe
it's a depressing thought.
Well, this year, a whole new different story, and I'll talk about that maybe later in this countdown. All right, I'll take my number four.
All right, four.
Well, you know, again, I'm going to keep going back to season one, not just our first episode, but if whenever I listen to season one episodes in the form of time loops, I'm kind of surprised to hear myself insert theological talk so much more than I do currently. And I think the reason is you and I were in school at the time.
Yeah.
So my number four is going to be a couple different things all lumped together. So I'm no longer pursuing a pastoral job, which I was in 2011.
Yeah, that's a trade.
Because of that, I was going to school for my master's in theology, which kind of that, you know, when you're immersed in that world, you just can't help but speak in theological.
Or maybe we were feeling the pressure because we did call the show the Sci-Fi Christian.
Yeah.
We got to get that Christian stuff.
A couple
in
years in, we're like, whatever.
Yeah,
we're Christians that talk about sci-fi.
That's right.
No, but yeah, so yeah, I'm probably a lot less immersed in the whole theological academic side. At the time in 2011 that we started this, I was a youth director at our church, and you were the pastoral intern, and you basically announced on that first episode that you were soon going to be promoted. And what did you move to from pastoral intern to
discipleship pastor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then eventually executive pastor.
Right.
So,
and eventually Catholic.
Yes. So it changed.
That was a transition.
So Protestant to Catholic for Ben, me youth director to nothing.
Right.
I was a youth director. Then I...
Well, you could be a Catholic if you... like. That position's still open if you want to follow in my footsteps.
Maybe in 5 years, yeah, we'll say, wow, know. What's changed since 2011 yeah. or 2016?
Right.
Yeah, so kind of a hodgepodge. No longer pursuing a pastoral job as I was back then. No longer in a pastoral position as I was back then. And no longer studying theology on a regular basis.
Or talking about it on the show.
I know, not so, very much. So,
well,
sorry,
aren't you reading the Genesis 2 book?
Oh, yeah, I did start that, so we'll be having that episode here.
Yeah, it's going to be rough because I read it like a year ago now, so I'm going to have forgotten it, but that's okay.
The Lost World of Genesis 2 coming soon.
Yeah.
All right, your number four?
Well, my number four, probably no surprise to anyone, a little bit of pop culture burnout from...
Mm-hmm. What?
From where I was at before. Like,
you're so positive in the first season.
I know, and I think that it is a little bit of like, you know, you gotta, hey everybody, we're into this sci-fi business, and it's like people need to understand I love sci-fi and I love this. I just like I also love having standards, and sometimes I've noticed that some of the people we interact with don't have particularly high standards for what they watch. Like, oh, just throw Batman in it, we'll love it. You know, just throw Star Trek in it, we'll love it. No. So I've been taking a stand, and I feel like people have come to appreciate it. I know I've come to appreciate it. And certainly, rather than just being like, oh, I'm going to like Heroes because there's superheroes in it, and I like superheroes, I'm going to say, no, Heroes is the worst thing that's ever been filmed.
Hmm.
I mean, within reason. And
so,
yeah.
I think in the case of Heroes, you're right. But,
oh, yeah,
but
totally.
I want to ask
not,
you.
Wait, you think I am right.
But what I want to ask you is there a part of you, because I feel as your friend, there's a part of you that almost feels obligated to not be negative. That's not what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But kind of like to take a stand or to be the voice of reason. And I'm kind of using air quotes.
Well, I don't know
that.
If I'd say obligated. I enjoy being the voice of reason.
But almost to the extreme, right? Like where it's like Star Wars, for example. We just had that episode and I know you liked it.
I did.
But in the episode, you kind of came off as like really nitpicky about it.
I was not. I did not pick any nits. Those were legitimate issues in that movie. No,
so not to rehash that, but
yeah.
I guess the point I'm trying to make is even with things that you actually enjoy, you still kind of feel obligated to put out a different side.
I think it has more to. Yeah, it is a little bit of a different side, but I think it has more to do with where people land. Like if people had come out of Force Awakens and said that movie sucks, it's worse than the prequels and everything, like you'd be hearing me defending it and saying no, that movie had problems but it's a good movie. People like were still rip Dark Knight Rises. And I said, no, yeah, there's flaws and everything, but it's a great movie.
Okay.
And so it's more that. It's more that I feel like the cult subcultures we interact with and we cater to are so overwhelmingly positive with anything that give in to hype blinders, nostalgia blinders so much that... And I don't think that's a smart way to operate. And so, yeah, I'm going to take a stand against that. But if people, like, if our subcultures had the opposite problem, you'd hear a very different take from me. I'd sound like the optimist. And I do with the cases where some of that stuff comes out and, you know, it's just trendy to hate things. I'll give you an example we haven't talked about on the show. But, like, season two of True Detective just got ripped. And it's not a great season. It has a lot of problems. It's nowhere near as good as the first season, which I absolutely loved. But it became the trendy thing to rip that season. And so if we did an episode on that right now, which we won because you haven't seen it, but you'd hear me defending that season, even though I have a lot of problems with it.
Okay. So if the majority is speaking one thing, it's you just feel like it's good to get your voice in there to have an alternative viewpoint.
Yeah, well, I don't trust majority opinions. I feel like, especially in the internet age, there's a lot of bandwagon opinions. It's easy for things to become an echo chamber. And I always feel like it's good and healthy as an individual. One of my goals in anything is to step back and really think about it. And not that I'm going to take always the opposite opinion, but to say, whoa, you know, let's think about this. I mean, I don't know if you've watched the... And I'm not going to talk about any spoilers with it because I know people are worried about it. But like the Making a Murderer documentary on Netflix, you know, a lot of reactionary opinions to that. And I agree with some of what people are saying and some of it. It's like, well, let's take a deep breath and actually think about this and realize we watched something that was edited. That, you know,
have you've watched it?
Oh, yeah.
Is it worth watching?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was like, I almost forgot my.
But like the majority opinion on something like Game of Thrones. Is really positive. I'm really positive on it. You know, majority opinion on something like Deadwood and the movie coming back. People are super excited. I'm super excited. But so it's not a case where I always want to take the opposite opinion. It's just I try because I don't enjoy getting caught up in hype or nostalgia. I feel like when I'm doing that, it's not an honest opinion. And I want to have an honest opinion about stuff. I want to evaluate things intelligently.
I think one point you made that I think I can get on board with is where you're talking about the internet age and how people just kind of jump on these bandwagons that are sort of out of nowhere. And then everybody just says, yep, that's a popular opinion. So I agree. So here's just in the last week, something weird happened with the new Force Awakens. Now, this is not a spoiler. We'll talk in non-spoilers here. But there, you may have seen in the trailer, there is that stormtrooper who has like a special staff and he you know has a... quick scene, one line. He yells just one line. He yells traitor.
Yeah,
and I felt like it was a fine scene the first time I saw Force Awakens. But in the last week, this guy has been developing a fan following. Have you heard about this?
Oh yeah, yeah.
And nobody was talking about this character at all when the movie came out. But then all of a sudden, kind of started building, snowballing, just here in the last week. And now they're saying this is the breakout Boba Fett fan favorite character. And they gave him a name. They gave him a backstory, even.
Yeah.
Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Oh, that's totally what I'm talking about, especially when like Disney gets on board and starts giving them an official name. That's the other thing that really bothers me is catering to populist opinion instead of just telling a story. And that's what bothers me when J.K. Rowling gets on Twitter and starts changing the canon of Harry Potter. It's like, no, you told your story. Just let your story stand. Don't get on and do that. Disney, you're just trying to cater to populist opinion to make a quick buck over an internet meme. Don't do that. Just tell your story. And that drives me nuts. And that's what I respect about somebody like George R. R. Martin. He's not jumping on Twitter and changing Game of Thrones or Song of Ice and Fire based on, oh, we got hooked on this character or whatever. No, he's had his story and he's sticking to telling it, even though his stuff is immensely popular. And even though, you know, you even have to give George Lucas credit to that to a certain extent, even though he obviously wasn't very talented at it anymore. But I do respect him for not just wanting to cater to populist opinion. And I think it's an enormous problem. It's the reason why everything is being revived. It's because we can't just like something or have an opinion about it, it now has to, we have to cash in on it. We have to exploit people's fandom. And I think it's a negative trend. And so, yeah, I do want to be the voice of reason on that.
Good. No, I think those are some good thoughts. All right, my number three?
Three.
Well, you may remember, I used to watch a lot of television.
Yeah.
Like, basically, anything that was semi-superhero related, I'm in. So, Heroes, of course, but even shows like The Cape. Oh. Remember The Cape?
I never watched The Cape, but I can't imagine it being worse than Heroes.
Just try, like, right now we're living in sort of a, some people have said, a golden age of superhero television.
Well, but some people have said that.
And there was a time when I would have watched every single thing, even CBS's Supergirl.
Oh, man.
5 years ago, I bet I would have checked that out. But now, I'm putting my foot down. I don't have time for all that.
That's right.
But not just superheroes, but I'm talking about in general, I try not to waste my time on things that aren't that good. Like, if you can, whereas before, I just had more time to allow myself to waste on things that weren't that good. And so I feel like, probably to some extent with your help, I have become maybe more discerning in my viewing habits when it comes to TV and movies. Probably a little bit more picky because of things that we've talked through. I don't really have patience for dumb movies and television. So, I mean, honestly, I think 5 years ago,
is that why you watched Step Up last night?
Watched Step Up, yeah. You know, when you're with your wife, you got give and take. So watch.
I don't know. I'm following you on Letterboxd. I don't see a whole lot of give.
We should talk about Letterboxd.
We should, yeah.
Let's do it real quick.
Okay.
So just like Goodreads, which we talk about all the time, where you can log the books that you read, there's a site called Letterboxd, which is spelled Letterboxd.
Yeah, no E at the end.
No E. And then you can log all your movies. And Ben and I are right now investigating a television one to use. I think we've narrowed it down, but I haven't signed up yet.
Right.
So we'll get back to you on that.
Well,
but
you should just sign up for both of them. They're free accounts to create. Okay. So that way you can't really tell otherwise.
Okay. So Letterboxd, yeah. So, you know, Ben was teasing me off the air because during the Christmas season,
oh yeah, it was getting bad.
My wife and I like to watch a lot of the cheesy like ABC Family Christmas movies,
right?
Like in abundance. I probably watched 15 of those. Well, not just those movies, because we also watched classics like Holiday Inn. Have you ever seen Holiday Inn?
I haven't. No.
Classics like Elf.
I don't like that movie.
But yeah, now that we're done with that, we kind of go back and forth, and she chose Step Up yesterday, which I believe is Channing Tatum's film debut.
Oh man.
Yeah.
And you chose Justice League, Gods and Monsters.
Oh no, that was just me watching alone.
So yeah, not a lot of give and take.
Yet. But what was I saying about movies?
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean I think that's a little different if you're spending time with your wife than but when I have my own time, I'm like cutting out shows that I don't like as much.
See, I feel like in your own way, and this is just personality difference, you're essentially responding to the same thing I am in a Matt Anderson way.
So,
like what you were saying, before I would have just watched Supergirl and Heroes Reborn and all this stuff that I know isn't good, but because of superheroes, I'm on board. And that's very much what I was just saying, that it's like, I feel like our culture, the subcultures, you just throw something that looks cool at it, and we're on board no matter what, unless it becomes trendy to hate something. And that's the only case where people won't like it. Otherwise, oh, it's superheroes. This is so cool. And I think that just makes us bad viewers.
Yeah, like I would even have, we had a top five favorite trilogies episode that you and I did a couple years back, and in that episode we also talked about our least favorite, and I included on my least favorite list Spider-Man, the Sam Raimi Spider-Man trilogy.
Yeah.
And I think 5 years ago when we started the show, I would have had a hard time admitting that I didn't really like that.
Right.
Because I just kind of like Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Things like Fringe, both you and I loved at the beginning of the Sci-Fi Christian. And I think over time we kind of...
Well, I stopped watching it, so that tells you.
Not right away, though.
No, eventually.
Watched, yeah. And I wouldn't go too far. I'm not going to go too far with this, but even Lost, I feel a little bit less in love with.
It's okay.
I still like Lost.
Damon dropped the ball.
They did. I'm not saying anything bad about Lost. I just feel like, I mean, it's been 6 years since the show ended, 5 years since we started this show. I think some of my love is waning a little.
Matt Anderson on Letterboxd. Tomorrowland.
Yeah, Tomorrowland.
3.5 stars.
That's one I chose. Yeah, there you go. Give and take.
So 3.5 stars, and I gotta imagine there was some rating inflation there due to Damon Lindelof's name on the credits. So that's got to be about a 2-star movie for you.
I think I'm trying to be as honest as possible.
I don't know. You gave Attack of the Clones 3.5 stars.
Oh, I did?
Yeah.
You know, there's some Matt Anderson inflation.
I understand. No, you want to make people feel good. And so you don't want Damon to see your account think you're a Damon hater.
Oh, man, if Damon ever saw 3.5, I hope he'd still be my friend.
Except for Harrison Ford, because he gave Patriot Games 2 stars.
Oh, man, that was a slow movie.
It did not hold up?
I don't think so. No, and I don't know if I ever saw it in full in the past, but...
I haven't watched it in years.
Yeah, I had a hard time through that one.
Yeah, I understand.
All right, number 3 for you, Ben.
Oh, man, I got to get off your Letterboxd account here. Well, number 3 is kind of an interesting one that ties into life changes, of course, but also how I think about things. And, you know, because I got all sorts of kids. Kids are coming out of the woodwork at my place. And with my older two doing what kids are wont to do, which is getting older, I've been reading out loud to them a lot over the last couple years. It started with Ellie a few years ago with reading Narnia to her. And then, you know, she got older. Now I'm reading to Owen a lot, and I'm reading to her a lot. And we've read Lord of the Rings out loud. And so I've realized I really enjoy reading out loud.
Oh, that's cool.
And yes, I know we've had some requests for me to read something in the public domain that can be shared publicly, which I'd like to. I probably am. I mean, it's a lot of work, too. I think Trevor had suggested Don Quixote, which would be fun to do, but that's about as long as Lord of the Rings, so I don't see myself investing in Don Quixote. But you know, I've realized I really, really enjoy doing it, and that it gives you a very different perspective on books and whatnot. I feel like my experience with reading Lord of the Rings out loud, which I've done now twice within a little over a year, really gave me a very different perspective on the trilogy than I had ever had before. I've read it many, many times before, but that was a incredibly different experience. And same thing with Narnia, same thing with a lot of the stuff we've read. And so I found I enjoy it and also am benefiting from it.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So read out loud. And I saw Dear Zoo out there, classic.
Oh, yeah.
So I can tell you're reading out loud to
Lily. I've also been reading out loud, yeah. Dear Zoo, If You Give a Mouse a Cookie.
Right.
Things like That's Not My Goat.
Yeah. Dear Zoo, though, just...
Have you heard of this That's Not My series?
Oh, yeah,
That's Not My Angel.
We've got a bunch of those.
That's Not My...
Car.
Puppy, yeah. Rabbit, Bunny, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah. Dear Zoo is a kind of a messed up book.
No, Dear Zoo is awesome.
Well, no, think about it, though. Like, first of all, fortune and shipping costs. It's like, get on the phone. First of all, a zoo is not a pet shop. That's number one. Second of all,
well, people,
if you're ordering...
Listeners might not know. This is a children's book.
Well, they
book.
Can go look it up.
Yeah, go
it's
search.
It's a basic plot.
Where a child asks for a pet, and they continually send animals that aren't quite the right fit.
Yeah, like a snake.
An elephant.
Yeah.
Giraffe.
Giraffe. Lion.
Monkey.
Yeah. Toe. They eventually
frog.
Get smaller. Yeah, they go, that's like, well, what are we going to send them next? Send the frog! You know, the backstory on Dear Zoo is pretty bizarre.
Maybe we should write the fan fiction origin story to Dear Zoo.
We could.
All right, I'm ready.
Number two?
Number two. Mine also has to do with reading. You may remember, back during the early days of the Sci-Fi Christian, I sort of I had a bad reputation when it came to reading. People would, the listeners would tease me to no end.
That's right.
About the fact that I never finished books.
Well, years ago, we had a contest for when you would finish Flight of the Angels, and never was the most popular guest.
Yeah. I mean, so I've loaded up my Goodreads here. I've mentioned this a couple of times. I don't know what my reading was in 2013, but I did start keeping track here in 2014. But no, I do know. 2013, so I can't go all the way back to 2011 when we first started, but 2013, I finished 4 books.
Yeah.
And then that's when we started to kind of do our reading challenges. So I picked it up. 2014, I finished 29 books. And here's a spoiler for our upcoming books episode.
Right.
Is it okay if I spoil here?
Yeah, yeah.
In 2015, I finished 47 books.
Oh, that's not a spoiler. I put that on the book survey.
Oh, okay.
Because I figure people need to know so they can guess for next year.
Yeah, and so, I mean, that's a...
That's awesome.
In 2 years, that's a pretty significant increase.
That's like, I don't know how many thousands of percent increase that is, but it's a lot.
Yeah, so I finish books now that I start, or I just quit them like you taught me to do.
Yeah.
Just like TV and movies. If I'm in the middle of something that's not good, just quit.
Right.
Don't waste your time. I feel like I'm more into older books now than I have been in the past.
Yeah.
And I mean, I guess along those same lines, I am into some older films as well.
Right.
Maybe even older TV shows, though not to a very great extent. I haven't watched a lot of those. But yeah, so reading way more. With your help, I mean, I'd always listen to audiobooks here and there, but since you and I have been talking about them over the years, I feel like now I'm basically nonstop listening to audiobooks, whereas I think 5 years ago I was listening to almost all just podcasts.
That's true.
Nonstop podcasts. So I still listen to podcasts, but it's interesting, since we are doing a podcast, I probably listen to audiobooks 80% and podcasts 20% of the time.
That's awesome. Yeah, I love audiobooks.
So that's a pretty big change for me over the last 5 years.
Yeah, that's huge.
All right, number two for you.
My number two is probably the most recent one in terms of these on the list. And I'm going to call it the Stanley Kubrick Revolution for me, which isn't just about Stanley Kubrick. But let me back up here. For people who have listened to the show for a while, you know that I have a little bit of a bad habit of doing other things while watching TV and movies, including working. Which at times when we've discussed TV and movies has led to me being completely in the dark.
Like X-Files?
On certain things that have happened. And I still do that with things where I don't want to pay attention. But I got to say, a funny thing happened this year, which is that as I started to get into Stanley Kubrick's movies, I was doing that and I realized I need to stop and actually watch these. Like, I need to pay attention. Like they forced me to say, no, these are worth your time in the same way a good book is worth your time. And that was really it for me. I was like, well, you know, I've always been more of a reader. I'd rather spend my free time and stuff for stories on reading than watching movies and everything. And that really, really changed for me in a big way because I realized I need to take the time to watch this and to absorb it, and this stuff is worth my time. And so I started with Stanley Kubrick earlier this year. You've heard me talk about him if you've been listening even a short time, watching and rewatching his movies because they just demanded that type of attention. And then more recently, I've been getting into the Criterion Collection movies, which I don't know if you're familiar with the Criterion
Collection. I've heard of them, but I don't really know what qualifies something for that
Essentially Criterion goes back to 1984 when they started releasing movies on Laserdisc, and they are they're the reason. If you've ever enjoyed a special feature on a DVD, you should thank Criterion because they invented special features.
Okay.
So essentially what they are is they're a film restoration company. They release some modern stuff, like most of Wes Anderson stuff is on there and everything. But they do a lot of film restoration for movies that have been damaged or forgotten, or, you know, and they do extensive work. If you buy one of their Blu-rays or something, the case first comes with incredible artwork, and then it has essays in. Like, they have a booklet that has, like, usually two, three different essays in there about the movie. Wow. Extensive special features and everything. Really fascinating stuff. So I've been getting into those movies a lot, and really have enjoyed them, and that's driven me back to old movies. It's driven me to foreign films that I haven't seen before. I've watched John Cocteau's Orpheus trilogy, which I absolutely loved. Charlie Chaplin with silent films. One of the more interesting ones that I watched recently from Criterion is Indian trilogy called the Apu trilogy, which is this coming of age thing. I'd never heard of it before. I watched it. It's just absolutely incredible. And then I was watching some of the special features and like the restoration job they did on this, where the original prints had been burned in a fire in London in the early 90s, and they just go through this painstaking restoration process. So I've developed a lot of respect for them, and it's driven me to really appreciate film, not as a secondary storytelling mode, which I think is kind of how I was viewing it before, but as something where you can make cinema that is as meaningful as a good novel. And these movies in the Criterion Collection, not all of them by any means, but many, many, many of them do exactly that. And it's been a very mind-expanding experience watching these foreign films, watching stuff I never would have heard about before. And it's challenging, and it's eye-opening. It's changing the way I'm thinking about stories. I'm thoroughly enjoying that.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I didn't know that about you.
So follow me on Letterboxd, and you'll get to hear all about it.
Yeah, Letterboxd.
Yeah.
All right. My number one, everybody.
Number one.
Well, back in 2011, when we started this show, I was unmarried, and family has changed everything for me. In August 2013, I got married. In October of 2014, we had our baby girl, Lily. So I feel like that's definitely the hugest change, and it changes the way I view a lot of the things that we talk about on this show. You just see,
that's true.
Yeah, you see life through a different lens when you're coming from the family perspective. So we've talked about that in the show. In fact, we've had episodes about getting married and episodes about having kids. And so you can go check all those things out in the archives. But yeah, that's for sure my most significant change since we started back in 2011.
All right, my number one. Well, obviously, like, if I'm talking personal changes, the Catholic thing is the biggest one.
I can't believe it. Is that not your number one?
Well, I put me to a runner-up just because I tried to, in the original spirit of this episode, things that were more in terms of pop culture, sci-fi, all that stuff. And so if I'm looking at it that way, Catholic is probably the biggest individual change. But if I'm looking at it in terms of more of the show, I'd say my biggest change is I've always liked old stuff, but I've really become dedicated to reading, and I just mentioned watching, but especially reading older books. And I think, you know, Dante's a prime example here this year. And not just having that as something, oh, yeah, I enjoy it, but oh, it's tough to do. And so I still go read modern novels. I'd say I read almost no new stuff these days. And that's not because, as some people are now rolling their eyes, I'm just out to be a pompous so-and-so, though maybe I am. But no, it's because I've come to really enjoy that stuff. Like, and it takes discipline, and it takes time to learn how to appreciate that old stuff. And I don't, you know, somewhere in the last 5 years, that's clicked in me. Even though I've liked that old stuff, I found it exhausting to read before. And now it's very much the opposite for me. I can't get into most new modern fiction, and whereas now that's the stuff that I want to read. I mentioned Don Quixote a few minutes ago. I read that or listened to that a couple of years ago and just absolutely loved it. Shakespeare, I've been working my way through his catalog. You know, Dante's been huge. All this stuff, and there's so much good stuff to read out there that's old and is worth your time, and so really discovering that and being driven back to saying that not only is it good stuff to read, but it's stuff that ought to appeal to our type of fans and our type of listeners much more than it does. And it goes to part of what's caused me to have higher standards for the things that I'm watching. It's like, well, no. It's not okay to, you know, the reason you love these stories isn't because people are running around in capes and tights. It's because it evokes something, but it's a lot of them are evoking it in a shallow way. You go back to these stories and you see them evoking those same feelings and emotions and experiences, but in a way that is so much deeper. To go back to Criterion for a second, even though I'm talking more about books, but one of the directors who I've really come to enjoy through Criterion is Akira Kurosawa, who, if you're familiar with him, you're probably familiar with him as somebody who was a major influence on Star Wars in his movie The Seven Samurai. Really enjoyed it, and it's like that's part of what's fun about going back is that it helps you appreciate that stuff so much more. And after watching a handful of Kurosawa films, I still have a lot more to watch, but like I see what George Lucas was trying to do with the Jedi in a completely different way, and he's evoking who the samurai are. And there's a great line in Seven Samurai where the samurai are presented as this kind of dying out class and these group of men who history is about to leave them behind, and they have the great line where this victory wasn't for us, we're not actually going to benefit from it. Why? Because they're still fading from history, and you get this sense of sadness and longing. And then you go watch Star Wars A New Hope and you see Obi-Wan's in that exact same situation, and that's the arc of the original trilogy, is the reemergence of that samurai Jedi class who has faded from history. And that's part of what's so powerful about that. And so it makes something that I've loved my whole life even better by going backwards. And I can think of example after example of that, of books, movies, where going back makes the stuff I still enjoy that's new even better.
Wow. That's a good one. Yeah. So talk about the Catholic one, though. That's a, I mean, I know it's a runner-up. I don't have any runners-up on my list, so I thought that would be like an obvious one for your top five.
Well, it's an obvious personal one. Yeah, I mean, the Catholic one's huge in terms of that I feel like Catholicism done right, and I don't do it right. I'm imperfect in terms of all this stuff, but Catholicism done right ought to be something that fundamentally changes your worldview. I'm teaching confirmation at my parish, co-teaching confirmation this year, and that's one of the things that we've stressed to the students many times on many different issues, is that Catholicism invites you to think fundamentally differently about the world than the culture at large does. It's meant to be an invitation to think about all these issues differently. You know, and that's the case whether it's, you know, controversial social issues or the way we think about God or philosophy or anything. It's fundamentally, no matter what age we're in, whether we're in a postmodern, post-Christian world or whether we're at the height of Christendom, a healthy Catholicism ought to challenge you to think about the world differently. And that's been a big influence on me, even though I do that very, very, very imperfectly. But it's also been a big influence in terms of how I think about art, because I think that that comes through in terms of Catholic artists when they're at the height of their craft. Certainly that perspective and that kind of realization has helped me appreciate Tolkien a whole lot. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I could have appreciated Dante without that. And that's not to say you can't appreciate Tolkien or Dante if you're not Catholic. It's simply that, for me anyway, it's easier to see it looking at it from that perspective. Even somebody like C.S. Lewis, he's an Anglican, but he's a high church Anglican. And so that kind of invitation to liturgy and that fundamentally different way of thinking about the world. Not to say that evangelicals or Protestants don't think about the world differently, but there's something about the liturgy that really is countercultural, even beyond what you might experience in evangelical church. And the way that Catholics view liturgy, Eucharist, ritual, all of that comes together to change the way I view the world, but also the way that I think a lot of the storytellers I love have viewed the world. And I think it's why somebody like Tolkien was able to be so successful is I don't think you can separate his writings from his Catholic faith, not in an allegorical sort of way, but in a way where that type of seeing the world through a ritualized lens is so fundamental to him. And especially that when I read Lord of the Rings two times over the last year and a half, that's what really came through to me, is that when you read it as a liturgical text, which it very much is in some ways, it completely changes things. For example, there's so many Eucharistic overtones in there that, you know, the Elvish waybread and something, it's the strengthening thing. And that's contrasted with the orcs when they give Merry and Pippin their orc food when they're captured. And when you actually read the book, it's become such a pivotal thing where he's going on and on in the chapter about Merry and Pippin being captured, about how the orcs give them this food and drink that helps them go physically, but leaves them completely hollow inside. And, you know, reading that before as a Catholic, it's like, okay, that, you know, it's cool orc stuff. Then as a Catholic, you're like, oh, he's talking about the Eucharist, and he's contrasting a black mass with the holy mass, and then the Marian overtones of Galadriel and all this stuff, and this comes through all over the place. Lord of the Rings is a very liturgical text, and I would have seen that if it wasn't for being a Catholic. So maybe I should have made this on my list. I don't know. I didn't number my list.
Nah, that's
it's
good.
It's just 1.5, I guess.
Ben, great list tonight.
I have one more runner-up.
Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
Just kidding.
Oh, my runner-up.
Just kidding, go ahead.
Well, I started biking a couple years ago, 3 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we wouldn't have had the Sherlock episodes if I wasn't biking around with Sherlock. And you get thinking about it. And, oh, by the way, for people who are interested in alternate readings, which that's one of the things you guys voted on for our year-end award, what you want more of is alternate readings. I've got one.
For what?
I'm working. I told you about it a little bit. Hamlet.
Oh, yes. Yep. You did talk about that. Okay.
I'm not going to tell anybody what it is right now.
Okay.
But we're going to wait till Matt reads Hamlet.
Yep. That's right. And was that in the Lego bricks?
It's in the, okay, so you can read the Lego
one.
Okay,
good. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm going to hit the music, Ben, but then let's talk a little bit post credits.
All right.
About next week.
Yeah. Well, I started watching my. Wait. Oh, should I make my confession here?
Make it post-credits, because I don't know if I know what it is. Do I know about it?
Yeah. It's regarding a little contest.
Oh, no. Let's save it for next week.
Okay.
All right, everybody. Well, thanks for joining us, Ben. Happy anniversary. It's been a great five years.
Anniversary.
It's been a great 5 years working with you. We'll be back next week with another episode, but for now, that's all from here. I'm Matt Anderson.
I'm Ben DiBono.
We are the Sci-Fi Christians signing off.
All right, goodbye.
All right, next week, X-Files, the conclusion.
Right.
Sort of. We're going to do the X-Files.
What do you mean, sort of?
Well, because we'll talk about our top five non-mythology episodes from season six
through nine. Okay, I've watched one so far.
And I'll talk about I Want to Believe the Movie, which you refuse to watch again, which I totally
understand. I'm never going
to
you'll understand once you see it. It's so bad.
I've never seen it, so this will be my first time viewing. So we'll talk about those things. And then it's basically the end, but now we know that the revival is coming back.
Right.
Or not coming back. Starting in 2 weeks. And I'm sure that when that season completes, we'll probably do a little debrief on it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we'll call it Excavating the X-Files part whatever.
Right.
Maybe not. But so then
I think we have to.
That will probably be the real conclusion. But we'll be done with all the classic shows
right
in a week. So that's crazy. Do you want to talk about what happened? Or do you want to let it go? You feel like you have to get it off your chest?
Well, I don't feel like I have to get it off my chest. Like, I don't feel guilty about it because it's only 45% my fault. So that's below the threshold of guilt.
Okay.
But I feel like people are going to want to know. We're going to have to address it at some point.
All right.
So, yeah, might as well. I'll probably, you know, mention a couple times, I guess. So, anyway, we have a contest every year where you guess how many books we're going to read.
Right. And last year, you got a little bit more in-depth, a little bit more thorough, and you created a survey for people to fill out. And that we didn't have that 2 years ago.
Right.
Last year was the first year.
Send it in our email. So, yeah, I created a survey. I got an app on our website, on our WordPress plugin that helped me do surveys. Did a survey. It's a great thing. It saves all your results right there on the website. So you want to see your results, you just go in, click on the plugin. It shows you all the results. So that's how I assembled the book episode last year. People filled out the survey, and it was wonderful. So then this year, it's time to figure out who the winner was, because we've read all our books.
Yeah, who read or who guessed that I would read 47 books, or who was closest.
Right.
And who guessed that Ben would read
however many. I have still been added up my exact number.
And who was closest.
Right.
So basically, that's the contest. Who can guess the number to the closest number that each of us read in the course of a year, and then we will send that person, that winner, one of the favorite books that we read from the past year.
Right. So I click on the plugin, and there's nothing there. And so I start looking around, like, man, is this the wrong plugin? Did I get the wrong thing? And so I start clicking around. I can't find it anywhere. And I check my email. There's nothing in there. I could have sworn it was this plugin. Well, I figure out, yes, it was in fact that plugin. Well, why isn't there anything there? So I start Googling. Oh, there's a bug in that plugin where sometimes it just erases all your results. So no results. So I have no idea what anybody guessed. And that's why I say it's only 45% my fault, because I should have written them down somewhere. But I thought I did have them written down somewhere. Now, before anybody worries about this next year, those of you who already guessed, I've got it in multiple places. So
I talked to Ben about this. He checked the box that said email me.
Well, no, the other one didn't have that.
Yeah, I guess.
So I'm using a different one. So they're going to be on the website, which is where they got deleted from this last year. They're going to be in my email,
right,
where they already are in my email, and they're going to be in a spreadsheet. Okay, so I'm going to have them in three places.
So have we been getting some good results so far? Like, how many people would you say? A handful?
Yeah, a handful. We have to do a reminder.
Okay, so here's a reminder. Go to the website,
yeah.
Fill out our book survey.
I'll put a reminder on Facebook, too.
Okay.
Give them through the end of January, since we're going to record that first week of February.
That's right.
So here's the deal. I feel bad because we wanted somebody to win. So if you did an entry, I want you to email me. This is on the honor system, everyone. Ben@thescifichristian.com, and just tell me I entered. Okay? Everybody, there's going to be a winner. Okay? And everybody's going to get some consolation prize.
Wow.
I don't know what that consolation prize is yet, because I want to see how well the honor system works. If 100 of you email me in and say I entered the contest, I know some of you are lying, and you're going to get a bad consolation prize. Like, if 2 of you email me in, you'll just win. And so we'll just see where it's at. But if it's around 10 or something, you'll get a good consolation prize. If it's closer to 100, you're going to get something terrible. Like, you would suggest, well, why don't you have everybody pick out an episode of a TV show
just
for
one.
You to watch? And I've done that in the past. And I said, well, I like that idea. But if 100 people say, oh, I entered the contest, I'm not watching 100 crappy episodes of TV or whatever.
Right.
I'm not watching 100 good episodes of TV just for the show. So we just got to see how this honor system thing works. The ball's in your court to see if you guys are going to be a bunch of liars or if you're going to just offer your forgiveness and just send in for your consolation prize. Now, I can understand if you're saying, I don't remember if I entered or not. Go ahead and send me the email, okay? So if you're on the if you're genuinely on the fence, go ahead and send it. But if you're like, oh, I thought about entering. I'm 99% sure I didn't, but maybe I did. You follow that honor system, or everyone's going to lose because of you.
Right. And we understand you probably don't remember what you guessed.
Yeah,
for
yeah
our
you
numbers.
Don't have to email the guess.
So just...
Yeah, just, Ben, I entered. That's all you
it.
Have to say.
That's it.
Yeah.
All right. Ben, that's great. Well, should we sign off?
Yeah, and if it's... I know people who've started listening in the last year, and if any of you email me, you're just straight out. Straight out. I'm going to disqualify you next year, too.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody. And so long, folks.
Yeah. Bye.